Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? Hey, Kevin Wall here. I'm happy to inform you there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. There are no networks, so you choose your doctor and hospital. Liberty HealthShare allows you to easily decide how, when, and where you will access healthcare. It could be the best practical, moral, and economical choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family, that's mom, dad, and all kids. This is the way healthcare should be. For information, call 855-585-4237. That's 855-585-4237. Or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. And regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
Washington, D.C. I got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. Listen up. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out.
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press. A show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one, time is running out. Number two, time is running out. Number three, time is running out. Number four, hang on, hang on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It's Live and Local now for a Monday brand new week, and that means Victor Jakes, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us on this bright and shiny Monday here in Southern Nevada after, gosh, a wonderful night of sleep. I mean, I just listened to it rain all night long.
It is, and you drive into work and there's snow on the mountains. It's a beautiful sight.
There was snow in West Summerlin last night.
Hey, there
about
was
10 o'clock.
There was snow down in the Inspirata area.
Oh, my
in
God.
Too, so.
You got to love it. You wrote over the weekend, and I know we've talked a little bit about it, but not enough, about Joe Lombardo, Metro Sheriff, and some of the comments he's made and some of the policies surrounding the Metro Police and illegal aliens. Can you talk a little bit about your column over the weekend, which I thought was fascinating, relative to what Joe Lombardo is actually trying to do here?
Yeah, so Metro has a program. It's called the 287G program, where basically if someone gets arrested, Metro will run them through an ICE database and see if they're in the country illegally, see if ICE is interested in detaining that person and then deporting them. And so illegal immigration activists, basically the entire Democrat Party, are upset about this program because they don't want illegal immigrants deported, and they don't want Metro, you know, being a part of that. And so, you know, there was a push 2 years ago to make Nevada a sanctuary state, and what that basically means is there would have been a prohibition on Metro talking to ICE. So, you know, if someone committed theft, they committed rape, they committed murder. Right now, we would find out if that person's an illegal immigrant. They would still serve their jail sentence, but then ICE would be notified, and then ICE could come and deport the person. And so a couple of weeks ago, Metro announced that for illegal immigrants who have just bench warrants, basically they've gotten a speeding ticket, they've gotten a parking ticket, they haven't paid it, there's a warrant that goes out for their arrest. For just those people, if they don't have any other criminal background, Metro will not be reporting those people to ICE.
And in essence, is this like the prelude to becoming a sanctuary city?
Well, and that's where the interesting thing comes in, because this is a sanctuary policy, and Metro is trying to say it's not. We're still in full compliance with ICE, and ICE is basically being pretty vague. They're saying, well, we have a written agreement, and that's still being followed. But, you know, my take, and Metro will insist this isn't the case, but it sure looks like they're worried, Lombardo is worried about a much broader effort to attack that program, to make Nevada some sort of sanctuary state. And so he's proactively saying, you know, look, look, these are the people who there's no criminal record aside from being an illegal immigrant. You know, there's not very many of them. I talked to the Metro lobbyists. I mean, there's not very many of these people who don't have some other sort of criminal record aside from just the unpaid speeding ticket. And so if he can, you know, basically get rid of the most sympathetic victim, then he's going to make Democrats defend making Nevada a sanctuary state with, you know, really, you don't want someone who committed a theft. You don't want someone who committed a robbery or a murder or some sort of violent crime. I mean, those are the people you don't want deported. And so politically, I mean, it looks like a really smart move.
The 80th Nevada legislature is meeting even as we speak, week number three. Is there any move afoot that you've heard in Carson City to broadening that and making that a statewide program?
Well, there is. I mean, there certainly is. Senator Ivana Kinsella, who was the sponsor of the Sanctuary State Bill 2 years ago, when the news came out that Metro was rescinding part of this policy, you know, said basically this is great. This is a first step, but there's much more work to do. The ACLU is certainly a big fan of eliminating the 287G program. And so it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I asked Steve Sisolak about this a year ago, and he said he opposed making Nevada a sanctuary state. But closer to the election, he, you know, stopped answering questions, including that question. I think it's kind of an unknown. You know, Sisolak and Lombardo have always seemed pretty close. So I do think that might be kind of the barrier there, that I don't know how interested Sisolak's going to be in doing this. And it's not a popular proposal either. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, everyone understands that, you know, look, if Metro arrests someone who is an illegal immigrant, that person should be deported, which means they shouldn't be committing any more crimes. And so, you know, you look at the murders up in Reno, Carson City area, that murderer, the accused murderer, the illegal immigrant, he had a speeding ticket last year. Now, if that had not been paid, and if Metro had arrested him, you know, under this new policy, they wouldn't have told ICE. But under the previous policy, they would have told ICE. He could have been deported, and you could have saved four lives. And so this is why the sanctuary policy is so bad.
And the first person who is killed at the hands of one of these people, there's going to be live in hell to pay for that, because I mean, it's going to be like Kate Steinle. It's going to be like so many other cases we've seen. Somebody's going to have to take the fall for that.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's what happens, is you get these instances where, you know, look, if the system just worked, if you hadn't prevented law enforcement agencies from talking to each other, you know, some crime would not have been committed. And so, you know, again, the sheriff is a very strong defender of the program. Even in his statement announcing or kind of confirming that the policy change, he talked about the importance of the program, of their ability to work with ICE. And so I very much think the sheriff is in support of it for exactly those reasons, because, you know, look, a great method of crime prevention is removing people who commit crimes from the country.
So does it look like Sheriff Lombardo is being dragged kicking and screaming into this new policy?
You know, it's really interesting, because the way it got brought up was basically offhandedly. The Metro lobbyist was testifying, just kind of giving an overview of Metro, and someone asked him about it, and he said, oh, we started this in December. And so the timing looked really odd, because the day before that testimony, there had been a protest at Metro headquarters about the program. But Metro is insisting that it's been in place since December, that Lombardo did it. And again, to me, the thing that looks most logical is he saw what happened in November, saw Democrats sweep to power, and says, well, look, I got to make some sort of concession. And this is a pretty small concession if I can save the rest of the program.
Victor Jakes joining us, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We are into week number three. They're probably not meeting today because it is President's Day.
I think they are. I mean, at least certainly some of the committees are. The money committees have a lot to do, so they kind of meet the whole thing all way through.
Even on a national holiday?
Even on a national holiday. There's only 120 days. I mean, their clock is ticking.
Wow. More coming up. We'll talk about what week three might portend and what the product of the first 2 weeks has been in Carson City. We'll do that and more coming up live and local now.
Councilman Steve Soroka ran on a promise of settling the issues regarding Badlands Golf Course, that he would work with all parties to solve the issues once and for all. That promise was empty. All he has done since his election is delay and obstruct any attempts toward a solution. Though the owners of the property are willing to meet anytime, anywhere to discuss the issue, Councilman Soroka has met with them once. Doesn't sound like someone who is working toward a solution. His refusal to resolve the matter not only leaves a huge undeveloped area in the middle of the district, but has left the taxpayers on the hook for possible endless legal bills and huge damage awards, while killing the opportunity for hundreds of jobs and millions in economic activity in the process. Enough is enough. It's time to put an end to this once and for all and recall Steve Soroka and elect someone who will solve problems and not compound them. To learn more about the issue and how you can be involved, please visit StopSoroka.com. StopSoroka.com. This ad was paid for by the committee to recall Councilman Steve Soroka.
It's the one day every year when fat is great. It's Fat Tuesday, and it's returning to Rhythm Kitchen. Hey, Kevin Wall here. Tuesday, March 5th, it's the 10th annual All-You-Can-Eat Fat Tuesday celebration. You'll enjoy Alaska snow crab legs, fresh Louisiana crawfish boil, catfish, fried shrimp, blackened chicken pasta, red beans and rice, plus Rhythm Kitchen's world-famous beignets and bread pudding. All served with salad and jambalaya. And be sure to ask about Rhythm Kitchen's Mardi Gras drink specials. Oh, and did I mention? Breathtaking views of the Las Vegas Strip, all for just $42 per person. You don't need reservations, but seating is limited and begins at 5 p.m. Check out this amazing Fat Tuesday Mardi Gras buffet at RhythmKitchenSeafoodAndSteaks.com. Rhythm Kitchen Seafood and Steaks is conveniently located on South Decatur, just off the 215. Call 702-767-8438. That's 702-767-8438.
My fellow Nevadans, have you been wanting to start a new business but just don't know where to start? Do you have dreams of being independent and free to use your creativity? I'm Nathan Taylor, President and CEO of the Taylor Consulting Group. It's our mission to help small business owners get their doors open. This year, the Taylor Consulting Group is celebrating our 10-year anniversary. To date, we have helped over 1,000 small businesses get started here in our great state of Nevada. If you want to open a tavern, a supper club, a cafe, or a banquet facility, we can help. Our firm specializes in gaming licensing, liquor licensing, zoning matters, and government affairs. We are your one-stop shop for all your business consulting needs. Don't wait any longer to make your entrepreneurial dreams come true. Contact the Taylor Consulting Group today at 702-483-7045. That's 702-483-7045. Or visit our website at thetaylorconsultinggroup.com. That's thetaylorconsultinggroup.com. At the Taylor Consulting Group, your success is our business.
For many, open enrollment 2019 closed on December 15th. Not if you're self-employed or an independent contractor. You have plenty of time to enroll. In fact, you can enroll up until February 28th for a March 1st effective date. Anyone who's paid on a 1099, has had a Nevada business license for at least 6 months, or is a member of the Real Estate Association, GLVAR, has the opportunity to enroll into better coverage for lower premiums. For more information, call Patrick Cassell of the MultiCare Group, 702-396-9449. That's 702-396-9449. The opportunity to buy better plans is now a reality. Lower deductibles, better premiums with national access networks is now an option. Call me, Patrick Cassell at the MultiCare Group today, 702-396-9449. That's 702-396-9449. And find out the options do exist. For more information, check out my website, The MultiCare Group. That's themulticaregroup.com.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
all across the state of Nevada and in SoCal, too. It's live and local now. Good to have you with us. Victor Jakes, three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us in studio. And I love it when he comes in studio. We always have so much fun. Some of the best parts are during the commercials. We just have more fun than you can shake a stick at. I want to ask you, we're now into week three of the Nevada legislature. What has happened over the first 2 weeks? Anything of substance?
The biggest thing was the Democrats passing the universal background check bill. That was the initiative in 2016 that passed but never went into effect because the lawyers who wrote it wrong and it wasn't enforceable. And so they passed a revised version effective January 2020.
In your view, beginning in January, when this law takes effect, it can't take effect till then because of the 3-year rule?
Yeah, Nevada's constitution prevents the legislature from amending initiatives for 3 years.
But as of January 1 or whatever the date is, are we going to be safer? Will less people die?
No. I mean, that's the great tragedy of this is they spent so much money on this. And, you think about, who is this going to affect? So private party transfers is basically what you're looking at. And so the people you want it to affect are criminals who right now are buying guns from private parties because there's no background checks required. So maybe there are dozens, hundreds of people who are stopped that way. Does that mean they're never going to get a gun? I mean, that's the problem is that there's still plenty of ways to get a gun. There's a UC Davis study came out, looked at this law in California over 10 years. 10 years. I mean, this is not a short study. Found no change in the rates of homicide, no change in the rates of suicide, and I think you could say that this bill would have been workable if they had just limited it to private party sales. I think people would understand. You're selling a gun. Okay, yeah. Let's look at the background checks for that. But they're doing transfers, and so. It's a different world outside of Clark County. I mean, you think about a place like rural Nevada, and one of the senators brought this up. He says, look, I got a gun in my truck. I'm on a ranch. A guy, one of my employees, jumps into my truck, takes it into town to run an errand or to, get a part for the ranch. I've transferred him the gun under the the thing is, there was no definition of transfer in the bill, which was just insane. And so basically, it's as broad as you can imagine. So you've transferred the gun to someone, and so you've committed a misdemeanor. You do it twice, you've committed a felony. And it's just, the law is unworkable and for all these other little incidental transfers. And the Democrats showed no desire to make a workable law, which again, I mean, this was a pure power play. It wasn't an attempt to craft a narrow solution targeted at the people that you would want to target. It's a terrible piece of legislation.
And yet you see time and time again where people legally obtain weapons or illegally. And it doesn't really, they can still kill. They can still kill even when they get them legally. You look at what happened in Aurora, Illinois. The guy should have had the weapon revoked. His license was revoked, and the gun should have been taken back by the state. It wasn't. He killed. 5 people are dead.
Yeah, I mean that's what you see so often is the current laws are not being enforced. The current systems are not working, and so what's the solution? Is it to go back and do the hard work of making the current systems work, or is it just to inconvenience the law abiding? And I think that's what's so frustrating for gun owners is they say, look, we don't want gun crime either. We don't want it either. That's why we're carrying guns in large part, because we want to be able to defend ourselves. But when you pass a bill and the main effect is going to be inconveniencing law abiding citizens, I mean, what are you doing? How do you take that as a good faith effort to fix a problem and not as an effort to get one step closer to gun registration?
Now, let me ask you this. I've had some of my friends, and some who are gun owners, who say, let's give them what they want. It's okay. Let's give them universal background check. It's not going to make us any safer. You know that. I know that. But let's just give it to them. Is this the first step on the road to gun registry?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you would hear it. I mean, not directly, obviously, but when Democrats were talking about this bill, they would say, "Look, this isn't the big solution. You know, this isn't going to solve all the problems. But if it saves even one life, it's
God,
worth
the
it."
The one life thing.
The one life. You know what else would save one life? Banning cars. I mean, do we do that? You know what else would save one life? Banning Facebook, so people couldn't get cyberbullied, who then commit suicide. I mean, that idea is so ridiculous. But the thing is they're going to come back in 2 years and they're going to find out it didn't work. There's still just as many gun deaths as before. And they're going to say, well, we have to do something. We have to do something. And so now that you've done universal registration, you're going to say, well, now we are universal background checks. Now you're going to say, well, we have to do registration. But again, I mean, the thing is, you know, and someone made this argument is, well, you know, just because people break the speed limit doesn't mean we don't have a speed limit. But the difference is that driving over the speed limit is inherently dangerous. Committing a robbery is inherently wrong. You want to stop everyone from doing those things. You don't want to stop every gun transfer. You only want to stop a very, very small segment of gun transfers. And if those people, those criminals, are going to ignore the law, then what's the point of a law that inconveniences all the other people who you're not worried about? And so that's where Democrats get this argument wrong, is because you don't want to stop gun transfers. You don't want to stop gun sales. You want to stop gun sales and transfers to a very small subset of people. And if those are the people who will ignore the law and will get their guns another way, the law is worthless. And it's worse than that. It's destructive because you're inconveniencing and you're harming all of these people who shouldn't be affected by it.
Good people.
The good people. Exactly. And what's so funny is when they were doing the testimony, the law exempts transfers between family members, but not doesn't include that as in-laws. And so a similar
it was immediate family.
Immediate family, yep. Right. I mean, it's some like grandparents and extended family, but not in-laws. And so Jill Tolles gets up and she says, you know, I got my first gun from my sister-in-law who's a cop. My father-in-law gave me a gun. Would those be illegal now? And the lawyer for every town for gun safety, the gun control lawyer, says, well, actually, you could just have them give it to your husband, and then he could give the gun to you.
But then it's a straw purchase, and you've committed a federal crime.
So here you have the lawyer for the gun group, just like off the top of his head, be like, well, here's how you could work around the law. And it doesn't realize, obviously, that's a federal crime because it's a straw purchase. But you know, look, if the lawyer himself can come up with this in like a millisecond while testifying in front of lawmakers, you don't think criminals are going to figure out the same thing? I mean, it's just, again, this law is not going to be effective. And that was a perfect illustration of why.
More coming up. Victor Jakes, 3-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. What lies ahead in week 3? We know the damage they've already done in 2 weeks. What are they going to do in week 3 in Carson City? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up. Live and local now.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
Love it. When Victor Jakes comes in, a 3-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, because we have so much fun. He was just checking the schedule of the legislature for this week, and they're going to get into some serious stuff.
Well, they are. I mean, I think one of the biggest bills is same-day voter registration is coming up for a committee hearing on Wednesday, and you know, I mean, talk about a terrible idea. But same-day voter registration is a terrible idea, and I have very few doubts that it will pass. I mean, it doesn't mean it's not worth fighting and worth pointing out the flaws with. You know, the biggest of which is, you know, what is to prevent someone from coming from California and saying, I'm a resident, and I mean, there was concerns about this in New Hampshire, I want to say it was with.
They'd come over the line from Massachusetts.
From Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
And they did a anyway, I just think there are concerns, and you know, people, what the Democrats will say is, well, there's no proof, you know, that we haven't seen evidence of widespread fraud, and it's well, who bears the burden? Is it the person, you know, should the system be secure? I mean, that's my position. We should make sure that the system is secure from potential threats, or should we say, well, it's okay if we have an insecure system if you can't prove that people are taking advantage of it and breaking the system. And so, again, the system should be rock solid, right? I mean, the system should have safeguards in place. We shouldn't say, well, we'll just rely on people's honesty because we don't need any safeguards.
The other thing that's going to be happening this week, and I guess it's this week when teachers wear red and they all flood the Capitol and they grab their members of the Assembly or the State Senate, and they talk about how we need more money for education. There've been all kinds of studies, and none of them seem to indicate that money equates to success, graduation rate, standard scores. I mean, why do they keep trying to sell us on this notion that more money will equate to results?
Well, because if we spend more money on education, we pay teachers more, we pay administrators more, we pay support staff workers more. And so, you know, behind the facade of, oh, it's for the children, we care. I mean, basically, if they succeed in dumping a lot of more money into education, their members are going to get paid more. I mean, so they're a union. I mean, that's what they do. They lobby to get their members paid more. And that's fine. That's what unions do. But it doesn't mean that we should be believing them when it comes to, well, look, we put more money in and we pay the same people more to do the same things and we're going to get better results. I mean, it makes no sense. And what people say is, well, look at Massachusetts and their scores are so good and they're spending so good. Well, you know why kids in Massachusetts are doing good? Because they're from Massachusetts, because their parents on average are more highly educated, because their population on average is wealthier, because their population on average has fewer minority students, and minority students across the country typically are scoring lower than Asian and white students. And so, you know, look, if you had Massachusetts kids and Massachusetts families in Nevada, we would be doing fine. But we don't. We have kids with more challenging circumstances and backgrounds, and that's fine, but we shouldn't be looking and saying, well, you know, if only we were like Massachusetts on the spending. I mean, we don't need to spend more. We need to give parents and students better options.
I want to ask you about Opportunity Scholarships. It was funded with $20 million, one time only. What we have seen, at least one study, one report, shows that these kids in the Opportunity Scholarship program seem to be doing better than their brothers and sisters who are not in the program. And I guess my question is, it's not in Steve Sisolak's budget. And my question is, will it get back into the budget? And if so, who will put it in?
Well, I mean, the question, the related question to that is the tax increase that Sisolak wants. He wants to extend a tax. And, you know, the rumblings are is that LCB is going to reverse itself and say an extension of a tax does not need a 2/3 vote, which is complete garbage. But if they rule on that, then they don't need Republican votes to pass the budget. And so that basically takes away Republicans' point of leverage, at least until they sue. And then there's a big lawsuit and everything's gummed up. So that's kind of the question. You know, Speaker Frierson has said in some of his campaign literature that he was a supporter of the program. You know, so maybe he comes out and is the champion of it. But I mean, those are really the two things, is that, you know, either Republicans get leverage because they have to have a 2/3 vote, or, you know, Speaker Frierson is convinced. I mean, then there's a lot of, you know, students in his district and who are benefiting from it. I mean, this is a program specifically for low-income students. And so there are Democrats across the country who are looking at this and saying, look, this program works. I mean, we love public education. We support public education. But why would we stop programs of school choice that are helping low-income students succeed, and they shouldn't.
And are you convinced that the numbers are accurate? That I know it's a very small sample size, but that the kids on the Opportunity Scholarship seem to be doing better. I mean, do you trust those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, they were state reported numbers. I mean, it was a small sample size, so I don't feel like it's you would like to see more. I mean, it was like 150 students, so you would like to see something more. But I think the thing is look, the Clark County School District's proficiency rate is like 30%. I mean, so if you hit 40%, right, like you're doing 33% better than the status quo. And actually, for low income students, it's probably much lower than 30%. So the bar, I mean, what's so funny about these school choice programs is they'll say, well, why aren't 100% of the kids doing well? And if 20% of the kids are failing in these programs, we better shut that program down and send them back to the public school system where 70% of the people are failing. So, let's just use one measure, because if the measure is, 30% failure is not good enough, then get rid of the Clark County School District, because it is a complete failure factory, because 30% of the fourth graders are proficient in reading. So that just makes me sick, where Democrats will focus in and say, well, we have to have accountability for this school choice program, and ignore the system that's educating 90% of the kids in the state, and that has a 30% success rate. Just find one standard and stick with it. That's all I ask.
Want to take you to current events. Last night on 60 Minutes, Andrew McCabe, a guy who is a liar, I mean, we all know he is a liar, is trying to hawk a book and talk about what at least Lindsey Graham seems to think is the onset of an administrative coup to uproot the president of the United States. First of all, what do you make of his comments? Rod Rosenstein says, no, we were just joking.
Well, what's so funny is when Trump talks about the deep state, the general reaction from the media and the public is, oh, look, he's a conspiracy theorist. And then, the high-ranking FBI official comes out and says they were trying to do a coup against the president.
And explain just because the terms get thrown around, 25th Amendment. Explain what the 25th Amendment is.
The 25th Amendment is, say a president has a nervous breakdown and just cannot function, then if the cabinet, majority of the cabinet members and the vice president would vote and basically say, look, the president is not fit for duty and it could be, then the vice president would become. But again, this is not because the president fired your boss, which he had every legal authority. This is like, he goes into a coma, right? Like he slips and falls and he's not waking up thing. That is 100% what he is talking about and what he is bragging about on television, that the media just won't be like, excuse me, you work for the president and you're talking about overthrowing him. I mean, this is what we do in the third world.
Is there a crime here that I'm missing?
I am not a lawyer and I'm going to pull that card out here. So I don't know. What's legal or what's not. I mean, is it legal to discuss it? My impression would probably be yes, but I mean, it's wildly inappropriate for someone to do this, especially because the impetus for it was that he fired someone he had every legal ability to fire. When you work for the president, you work for the president. And if you don't like what he's doing, then quit. Don't try and use misuse the 25th Amendment process. I mean, really, really disgusting stuff.
I'm just curious because I don't know whether Andrew McCabe, the one thing Lindsey Graham said in, I believe it was Munich, was that he will, as soon as he gets back, begin an investigation with the Senate Judiciary Committee, of which he is the chairman, and find out if indeed this was an administrative coup attempt, and if so, what should happen to Andrew McCabe and Rod Rosenstein, I guess, because he was one of the people. He's the guy that supposedly was spreading this around and talking, nose counting the cabinet members. This is just bizarre, but like you say, it's what you'd see in a third world country.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, if you're in the FBI, I mean, you work for the president. You are not an agency unto yourselves. I mean, you don't have power outside of the executive branch. And so what you see is you kind of see these career bureaucrats think that they've been elected president, that they should be the ones running the country. And it's really discouraging depressing stuff because, I mean, they're the ones who are supposed to be enforcing the rule of law. And when you can't trust them, I mean, it's very damaging to the country. And so I'm glad that Senator Graham is going to do an investigation and the truth needs to come out.
I know that I always bill you as the three-time-a-week columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, but you do a lot more there. You do video. You have your own program.
I do. I do a video interview program, and I'm excited to. I've got some Las Vegas City Council candidates coming on the next couple of weeks, and I'm excited to talk to them and hear what their plans are for, you know, if they got elected, their positions on some of the issues facing Las Vegas. Including, you know, Badlands, public safety, homelessness. So, yes, it's called Nevada Politics Today. Everyone should watch.
And I know I'll be watching. Victor, always good, man. Thanks so much. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
That's Victor Jakes, three-time-a-week columnist and a TV star for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us. Coming up, what happened on the Sunday shows and this Scott Pelley interview with Andrew McCabe. Some of this stuff is just bizarre. I mean, it really honestly is. We'll let you hear it in their own words coming up next, live and local now.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Light your liberty. Starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple. And no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To find out how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. A few months ago, a friend invited me for a Tuesday evening of fun at Ichabod's Lounge. Ichabod's isn't in my neighborhood, and yeah, I had to drive an extra 10 minutes, but boy, am I glad I did. What I didn't know at the time was that Ichabod's has been there for 31 years and family-owned for 19 years. It's one of the top gaming bars in Las Vegas with the best promotions and amazing monthly cash giveaways and payouts. As they say at Ichabod's, we manage with generosity. Ichabod's features incredible menu items, including steaks, seafood, burgers, pasta, and 5 daily specials. And their kitchen's open 24 hours for you late-night foodies. And I just love Ichabod's old-school Vegas atmosphere. When everybody else is cutting back, Ichabod's continues to super serve its customers. Check out their nightly entertainment at the Piano Bar from 6:30 to 10:30. You want to win? You want to have fun? Then I'll see you at Ichabod's Vintage Vegas Dining, Gaming Lounge, and Piano Bar on East Flamingo at Pecos.
Hello, this is Jared Fisher. I'm a business owner, community thought leader, and I ran for governor in 2018. As the owner of Las Vegas Cyclery and Escape Adventures, I know the importance of exercise and spending time in the outdoors. And I know the amazing outdoor experiences we have in Nevada. For this Christmas, Las Vegas Cyclery has kids bikes, affordable hybrid mountain bikes, and gift cards. We also have a wide variety of the latest e-bikes, which allows anyone to ride a bike, especially for those who want to ride a bike again but have some limitations. For more information, visit LasVegasCyclery.com. We're located at 10575 Discovery Drive at the exit ramp of Town Center and 215. Our phone number is 702-596-2953. And for those of you who are interested in a more extended outdoor experience, visit escapeadventures.com for gift cards and a one-of-a-kind outdoor adventure. Escapeadventures.com.
I'm Michael Schaus, Communications Director for Nevada Policy. In 2017, the state's only funded educational choice program was given an extra $20 million to help low-income kids find better schools. Now Governor Sisolak says he doesn't want to keep that funding in the budget. His plan to slash the program could mean nearly 1,000 low-income students are going to lose their scholarships and be forced back into schools that didn't work for them in the first place. In 2017, the Nevada Teachers Union promised they would roll this program back or even eliminate it. Unless parents start pressuring their lawmakers today, it looks like the union might just have their way. That's why it's more important than ever for parents to let the governor and the legislature know that improving education should mean helping kids get in the classrooms where they can truly succeed, not taking away the very scholarships that make it possible. Your voice, your phone call could be what makes a difference. So visit NevadaPolicy.org, sign up for our emails, and you can get involved this legislative session on this issue and all the other issues we're keeping a close eye on in 2019. I am Michael Schaus, Communications Director for Nevada Policy.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Light your liberty. Starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple. And no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To find out how you can save, go to LightYourLiberty.com. That's LightYourLiberty.com.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
One of the promises we make to you is that if you'll agree to listen on Monday, we will watch the Sunday shows, the mind-numbing Sunday shows, so that you can sleep in or go to church or play golf when the weather's nice or go fly in a hot air balloon or do whatever you want. Go to brunch. Doesn't matter. We'll keep track of the Sunday show. So it is Stephen Miller, senior advisor to President Trump. And I want you to listen to how he sparred with Chris Wallace. Give Chris Wallace credit. He asked the question like two and three times, talking about the National Declaration of a State of Emergency.
I know that you are a constitutional conservative and you believe the Constitution should be interpreted as written, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Here's Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7 of the Constitution as written. No money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law. Isn't what President Trump wants to do a clear violation of what the founders, of what James Madison talked about as giving Congress the power of the purse?
No, because Congress in 1976 passed the National Emergencies Act and gave the president the authority as a result of that to invoke a national emergency in many different circumstances, but among them for the use of military construction funds. And that was the point I was making earlier, is that if the president were to say we're going to use military construction funds to, say, increase the perimeter around a base in Syria, nobody would even say anything about it.
But
we have 4,000 troops on the border right now, and as a result of that mission, they need to secure those areas where they're patrolling.
But let's talk about national emergencies. National emergencies have been declared 59 times since 1976 when the law was passed, the National Emergencies Act. Can you point to a single instance, even one, where the president asked Congress for money, Congress refused to give him that money, and the president then invoked national emergency powers to get the money?
Well, first of all,
can you find out one case?
What you're missing, Chris, is that the national emergencies don't all have the same authorities and the same justification.
I understand that, but there have been 59.
Authority specifically refers to the use of military construction funds. Other emergencies, for example, were declared.
If you want to talk about military constructions, do you know how many times military construction has been invoked as a national emergency?
That one was in
twice.
Right.
Twice. Once by George H.W. Bush during the middle of the Gulf War, and the second time by George W. Bush right after 9/11.
Chris, can you
this
name,
is hardly comparable to either
name,
of those.
Can you name one foreign threat in the world today, outside this country's borders, that currently kills more Americans than the threats crossing our southern border?
You know, the joy of this is I get to ask you questions. You don't get to ask
no. The answer is no.
But then answer my question. Can you name one case where a president has asked Congress for money, Congress has refused, and the president has then invoked national powers to get the money anyway?
Well, this current situation...
Just yes or no, sir?
The current situation pertains specifically to the military construction authority.
I'm just asking. Has there been
a broader question,
Congress asked for money for military construction, Congress said no, and
the meaning of the statute, Chris, is clear on its own terms. If you don't like the statute, or members of Congress don't like the statute...
Would you agree the answer is no? There hasn't been
But the premise of your question is also false because Congress has appropriated money for construction of border barriers consistently.
ultimately, this thing is going to get decided probably in the U.S. Supreme Court. But before then, it's going to be decided. Let's go to cut two. I'm kind of changing gears here. But I want to get to Ron Johnson. He is a senator from Wisconsin. He is a Republican. And the question is going to be if Republicans will back the president on this state of emergency deal. This was yesterday on Meet the Press. Ron Johnson undecided on whether to back Trump's state of emergency.
I'm going to take a look at the case the president makes. And I'm also going to take a look at how quickly this money is actually going to be spent versus what he's going to use. If he's not going to be spending it this fiscal year or very early in the next fiscal year, I would have my doubts. So again, I'm going to take a look at it and I'll decide when I actually have to vote on it.
Do you share the concern that other conservatives have that if this is allowed to become precedent, where a president thwarted by a Congress that he disagreed with can end run Congress this way and declare a national emergency to take appropriated money and spend it anywhere, climate change, guns, you name it?
Absolutely, I share those concerns, which is why we're going to take a very careful look at what he's doing here in this instance. But again, I have to stress, this president has been thwarted in his attempt to keep this nation safe and secure, to secure our borders.
I don't know how Ron Johnson will vote, but I think his vote could be key to whether this thing ends up headed for the courts. We do know that the state of California, they're promising that they're going to sue the president. The ACLU is suing the president. A whole bunch of folks are going to be suing the president in the next couple of days. And the one thing I'm just about sure about is that the U.S. Supreme Court will end up determining if there is such an emergency. I happen to think that the president's on some pretty safe legal ground. But it will ultimately be determined in the courts, not the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but in the conservative-based U.S. Supreme Court. That's where I think this thing will all be decided. Now, coming up, we'll check in our nation's capital, Cassie Smedley. She's my old Kansas City buddy. I went to Rutgers. She went to St. Teresa's. And now we're talking on the same radio show. Wow, can you believe that? Yes, she is a national spokesperson, communications director for the Republican National Committee. What does she see as the issue to be talking about this morning? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up live and local now. Hot air ballooning. Over the decades, many of you have enjoyed the freedom of flight, floating high above the Las Vegas Valley, overlooking the beauty and diversity of our great city. But one segment of our society has been denied that opportunity. Wounded warriors, seniors, children with disabilities, in fact, anyone who's mobility challenged or might have trouble coming aboard. But all that has changed. Hey, Kevin Wall here, chairman of the board of Chariot of Fire Ballooning, a new 501c3 nonprofit. Our mission is to provide free or subsidized flights for those who can't afford it on one of a handful of hot air balloons in the world that are wheelchair accessible. Unlike other hot air balloons where you have to climb up and over into the basket, Chariot of Fire features a basket with a ramp so that everyone can come aboard with ease and with dignity. But I need your help. If you'd like to help wounded warriors and others in our community who are mobility challenged to live out their dream of flight, check out chariotoffireballooning.org. Your donation is tax deductible. That's chariotoffireballooning.org.